Get a head start on 2025 with CNBC's Big January, the hottest tech event, CES, from Las Vegas. The data, the numbers, the jobs report, and meet the future of biotech and pharma at JPM Healthcare. Check out the Amex Golf Tournament from California, Inauguration Day, and the meeting of world leaders in Davos. Plus, the first Fed decision of the year. Get ahead of the game. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Ready to take the snap. Has the snap. Fourth and 13. Ewers looking. Fires. He's got Golden open. He caught it. Touchdown, Texas. Matthew Golden strikes again. 28 yards on fourth down and 13. And the Longhorns score a touchdown.
Thank you to the Longhorns Radio Network. Wow, what a game yesterday. The rest of the college football playoff has kind of been a bit of a snooze, but we got a double overtime thriller yesterday, early afternoon, and Texas advances, but man, did Arizona State try to do everything they could, and particularly Cam Scataboo, who looked like he was left for dead at one point on the sideline. Pearl, he's puking his guts out, and he comes back to not only throw a touchdown pass, guys, a running back, but to throw the touchdown pass that really turned the tide, and was bowling over 300-pound linemen for Texas to get into the end zone. But that Quinn Ewers, 4th and 13 in overtime, send the game to double OT, and that's where Texas won it. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it was crazy, crazy game. I do feel like we've been arguing about it all show, that Texas, the storyline was Texas really should have won that game handily. Like, to me, credit Arizona, sure, but man, what were the Longhorns doing? They had a chance early in the game to pull away, and their offense just stalled completely. I mean, this was not, you know, this wasn't even a good Cam Scataboo game. Like, yeah. The Big 12 title game, he was unstoppable. They had him solved, Maggie. They had that quarterback running for his life. They had that game in their hand, and they screwed around. If they had walked out of that game with an L, that would have been such a huge problem for Steve Sarkisian. Because they are, you're going to look back, you're going to see the next two NFL drafts are going to be filled with Longhorns, and they're not going to be a lot of Arizona State guys, and yet you're going to say, well, how did that become a game?
I think it was honestly a little bit of both, probably. I think it was a little of Texas getting away from what made sense, and two, I think Arizona State deserves a lot of credit because the game was, what, 17-3 at the half. Right. And Arizona State made this a football game. And, you know, Cam Scataboo, just the amount of moments that he had in the game yesterday, even in a loss, and this was an all-time great game. And it wasn't a perfect game. By no means was it a perfect game, but was an epic game. And it was one of the great games that I've seen in college football. And I don't think I'm being a prisoner of the moment here. Listen, even
one of the great games?
Yes, one of the great games in college football. This had it all. It had punt return for a touchdown. It had fake punt to keep a drive alive. It had improbable comeback, a 16-point deficit that one team was in going into the fourth quarter. They overcome it. A controversial call where there was a clear, at least to me, targeting against an Arizona State wide receiver that got reviewed and never got called. You got a doinked field goal, missed field goal, overtime, and then we just played it for you, the 4th and 13 to tie the game. Like, that and the two-point conversion. It was, or excuse me, the extra point. It was crazy. It had it all.
It was a mistake-filled mess, and the Texas is going to lose their next game. And then in a month, actually in a year, let's look back on it. Honestly, like, some of the, you're right, there were a lot of little things, and I know you like little things, like when the ball girl walked in front of Bert Arburn when he was preparing for the kick.
How about Steve Sarkisian? Yeah. Okay, so Bert Arburn, who I feel like has been kicking field goals as long as I've been alive, this guy has made more field goals in the history of Texas where Justin Tucker went to school, right? So this guy is very prolific. He misses a 48-yarder. So then he's lining up for the 34-yarder to try to win the thing in regulation. Mm-hmm. And Steve Sarkisian goes at that point to give him, like, the big pep talk. Dude, get away from him. Get away from him. I think the coach believed he was doing the right thing.
Yeah.
But it clearly, I don't know if that messed up his rhythm or he was just overcompensating because he had missed to the right and then he missed to the left. Steve Sarkisian, you got to know better. Just let the dude go out there.
There, I... I was actually kidding about it. A lot of people are talking about these two ball girls walked right in front of him in his final warm-up kick, and you could see him be like, what the? He almost kicked it right into them,
oh my God.
He got off his game. The whole thing. And by the way, he's got a kick in the next game, and his confidence is clearly shot. That could be a problem if it was a close game. I don't know. I understand the epic game part of this. I just think, oh, my God, like, it just, like, spoke to the low quality of play this entire college football playoff to me.
See, no, I don't think so. I think you could look at blowouts, and there have been a lot of non-competitive games, and we'll get to the Rose Bowl in a second, which was not very competitive between Ohio State and Oregon. But this, to me, last night was exactly what you're hoping the college football playoff could be at its very best. It's college football. It's never going to be perfect, right?
Well, it's going to be better than that.
See, I don't
know. It's going to be the quality of play is definitely going to be better than that.
You know, here's the...
You didn't have a... Arizona State couldn't do anything for the first 56 minutes of the game. They just, like, their offense was stuck in mud.
I know, but see, isn't that the beauty of college football? That they needed not only two touchdowns, but two-point conversions to keep themselves alive in this game. And they got it, including a big interception on Quinn Ewers when they should have been trying to run the ball and run more clock anyway. So,
but they couldn't. Their running game was pathetic yesterday. It was terrible. You have three NFL offensive linemen and you can't get more than 2 yards on any carries?
Have you seen the final stats in terms of rushing? The Arizona State Sun Devils... 214 yards rushing.
Yeah.
How many yards do you think Texas had rushing?
60?
53. You're right.
Well,
and that's
way,
again on Sark.
Again, no, on Arizona State. Look at that. How many carries did it take to get to that number?
Standby.
Oh, sorry.
I gotta do some math here.
But they definitely, I saw they averaged about 4 yards a carry, way down on the season for them.
49 carries.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely couldn't run the ball like they normally do. So, credit, because Texas, that's my point. Texas is so much better. Like, you would say hike, and the two defensive tackles would beat their man immediately and start running after Leavitt on every play. Like, Texas should have won that game more handily. Credit Arizona State, all the heart in the world to stay in that game. Credit Cam Scataboo. I don't know how he got in on that. That overtime touchdown when he slingshot in the end zone. Incredible. The guy does not give up. But to be honest, he never should have been in that position. Texas should have put their foot on the gas early in the game. I think they got a little tight once they got that early lead and didn't play like themselves.
Poll question to update you on. Was Texas-Arizona State an all-time great college football game? 52% of you still saying no. I don't think we're being prisoner of the moment here because it's not just me. EJ and Manny and Bogish, we all came in this morning, and I think we're pretty level-headed. I mean, Manny thinks all of human history started in the year 2000.
But that's correct, yes.
We're slowly breaking down that barrier.
No, we're not.
All-time epic game, right, EJ?
Absolutely. Yeah, again, the great games of all time often have a lot of mistakes, like massive mistakes in the Super Bowl between the Patriots and the Giants. I talk about Catholic comedies all the time. Notre Dame, Miami, massive mistakes in that game. Mistakes are going to happen. It's all about the excitement. At the end of the day, like, that was a really exciting game. To go into that fourth quarter, the last 6 minutes, and you're like, the pendulum swings. You don't know who is going to win. That's what you want in the game at the end of the day. And I know Texas, obviously, they have what we think is a great quarterback in Ewers and what we think is a great play caller in Steve Sarkisian, but I'll be honest, like, when they've played against great defensive teams, that's what they look like. Like, this idea that, they should have had way more points, way more yards. I'm like, I don't know. I watched them against Georgia.
Yeah.
This is kind of what they look like. Like, how much of Texas's schedule has been them just pounding terrible teams and terrible defenses? Maybe when they play against playoff caliber teams, this is more of who they are. So I don't know if I accept the idea that Texas should have just rolled over them. Maybe they're just not that good.
Yeah, but, I mean, why can't they run on Arizona State? Like, that doesn't make any sense.
Arizona State's defense has really come around this year. And, I mean, you watched the Big 12 championship game. I mean, Iowa State, they couldn't breathe. I mean, they look smaller. They don't look like they should be a great defense. But, again, I ask you, in the Texas games that aren't against cream puffs, how is their offense looking?
I looked pretty good in the last game. I mean, it looked real good.
Against Clemson? I mean, Clemson gave up how many points to SMU in the second half? Like, Clemson's defense is not the same. It's not the same Clemson defense we saw years ago.
Also, they were an 11-point favorite in that game.
Right, they did what they were supposed to do in that game. At home, too.
Yeah, but they were they an 11-point? What was the spread in Arizona State? What's the difference?
I thought it was smaller. Was
well,
it?
Arizona State's a better team than Clemson. That's clear.
I don't know what the spread was on this game. I don't remember.
I mean, listen, Arizona State is not exactly a world beater this year. And they were without, as we talked about, their best receiver. Their passing game was completely non-existent.
I guess my question, though, is that looking at Texas moving forward, they have this massive game against Ohio State. Like we say, again, Texas has this high-powered offense. We think they should. But I just don't know when we see them against good teams if that's the kind of offense you're going to see.
Well, that's because Ewers is not playing well. I mean, I don't know if he's hurt. I don't know if the abductor, the ankle is still bothering him, but he's definitely not playing his best. And that's why I think everyone, honestly, like, they're not going to do it now, but go to Arch.
Yeah, but to be fair to Ewers, it was not an amazing game. But 4th and 13 to Matthew Golden, that will be an all-time Texas play, whether they get beat in the next round or not.
Yeah, but I do think if they get killed by Ohio State, I think a lot of people are going to say, man, this was a mistake. They really should have gone to Arch. Because I think Ewers is a little bit hurt. I really do. I don't think he's looked like himself. The interception, for example, like that's not a Quinn Ewers throw. It was in the air for about an hour and a half.
Yeah.
That was a huge mistake. I think Quinn Ewers is not really showing himself well in this particular college football playoff to the point where I don't think he's going to be able to go to the NFL this year.
Well, I'll be honest. If my team was drafting Quinn Ewers, I don't think I'd be that excited about it. Especially considering where he started, which was this high school phenom and then Ohio State and then to Texas. And it's like we've been waiting and waiting. And he's had flashes. He beat Alabama in Alabama when Nick Saban was still the coach by double digits. Last year, college football playoff, four games, you know, like we've been expecting a lot from Quinn Ewers as well.
It's going to be a really interesting test college football wise. What happens to him in the offseason? There was a report that he got a $6 million offer and we don't know what school it is. Is he going transfer portal? Does he go to the NFL? Or does he try to stay at Texas?
You can't. You cannot.
That's out. Okay, so that's off the table.
Because but if he stays, then Arch is going to hit the portal.
Just like even think about it. Like what is the possible like $6 million offer? Are we talking about Ohio State again?
I'm actually surprised.
I can't go back to Ohio State.
No, I'm actually surprised you're taking that at face value. You always have your eyebrow raised on all of this stuff, like, oh, no way he's really getting that, or no way this. To me, the $6 million offer for Quinn Ewers made me think twice.
My only point is, like, he's definitely the number one quarterback in the transfer. The kid out of Tulane got $8 million, and I've heard that's a totally real deal for 2 years at Duke. Duke is paying $8 million, a two-year deal. Like, Quinn Ewers is going to get $6 million. That's not a lot of money. Where's he going? Like, what's his future? Is it? I don't even know.
Belichick?
I'm just trying to.
Does he go to North Carolina?
North Carolina. Oh, God.
Well, Drake May just came from North Carolina, not with Belichick.
Yeah, Drake May is 6'4", and Greek God. I don't know. I don't see that. Maybe North Carolina. Oh. Do you guys like that fit?
I mean, why not, right?
Like, because,
give him a name.
Play for Belichick, you might have a better shot of, you know, him helping you get into the NFL.
Yeah, but you have this wild talent around you at Texas. Like, you can't go to a sort of Bill Belichick conservative scheme with sans any talent.
I kind of think in some ways it could help his stock, though, because I think a lot of us look at the Sarkisian offense and say, oh, well, this is just somebody, just a system quarterback, like we saw with Mac Jones, right? Like, Mac Jones had Devontae Smith and all these guys, and he put up these great numbers, so it's like, well, how can you not draft him in the first round? Well, now we know why we shouldn't have drafted him in the first round, right? So I feel like with some of these players we've seen playing in Sark's system, maybe it's good to get out. Go play under Josh McDaniels and put up numbers, and I'll say, okay, if he can do that with Josh McDaniels, then maybe he's pretty damn good. Maybe he's something I didn't think.
I don't see that happening. I really don't see that happening.
212-4227. Meanwhile, though, still got games to play for Quinn Ewers because he did come up with that massive 4th and 13 play. They were able to convert in overtime to send it to double overtime. Texas wins. Thrilling game. And now they get the fun job of trying to play Ohio State, which is clearly the best team in the tournament.
Yeah, thanks, no thanks.
Yeah, wow, good luck with all that. So Ohio State just absolutely brought it to Oregon in what I believe was the most stunning result from this entire college football playoff so far, and I don't even think it's close.
Can I ask you a quick Arch question?
Sure.
Because as we talked about a couple weeks ago before you guys left, where was the Arch package of him running around doing, like, they couldn't run the football? What happened to that?
Well, EJ, maybe you are correct in your, I don't know if I'll call it conspiracy theory, but you had a theory that the Manning family told Sark, cut that out of making Arch a human battering ram at the goal line. That's not what we're here for. That's not what he should be used for. He's not your Cam Scataboo. He's the next Eli and Peyton Manning.
Yeah, that could very well be true. Also, were there any short yardage situations? They basically, after the first quarter, they were in 3rd and 8 for the entire game until that one drive where they finally, somebody put smelling salts under the coaching staff's nose and woke them up.
Honestly, 10 penalties for 90 yards in this game.
There was a lot of short yards. There weren't, like, their offense was just not functional for a big chunk of that game. Very strange. It was a very, very strange game for Sark and that Texas offense. For example, the big play at the end, the 4th and 13 touchdown.
Yeah.
If you can make that play, why can't you make that play more than once in the game?
I know,
or
twice? That's like when you run the 2-minute offense and it's like, just run the hurry up the whole time. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't convert 4th and 13 all the time. That was just desperate.
No, I know. But the offense and the next drive where they score on the first play, like you see Texas when the offense clicks, it looks great. But it doesn't seem like they can have any consistency with Ewers.
You know, a team I thought was going to be really consistent was Oregon, because they've been consistent this year. Once they got through that early season, you know, a couple working out the kinks, and then they beat Ohio State in Autzen Stadium. They were the number one team in the country from that point on and never looked back. And they deserve to be the number one team in the country. And they just got taken to the woodshed yesterday in
Absolutely.
The Rose Bowl. 34-0. And it almost felt like before he could blink. And then they scored a touchdown and got a 2-point conversion before the end of the half and scored again in the second half. And I think it was 40-15 at one point. Maybe in 35-15.
Yeah, it was 34-15. So it might have been 41-15 after
and then,
the extra point.
Yeah, all right. Nope. They just could not have, they had no answer for Jeremiah Smith, the wide receiver, in the first half. And in the second half, they had no answer for the run game at all. And it was...
And defensively, they had no answer. Caleb Downs somehow was in Dillian Gabriel's head the entire game. Gabriel had nothing. He was trying to get into tight windows. It just wasn't there offensively, which is weird because we've seen that offense move at will.
It was odd. 855-212-4227. Yeah, I mean, just a bitter ending for Oregon. Bitter. And unfortunately, because the bar is raised so high for that program... It really, I don't say you throw out the whole season, but I don't know. I think it's almost honestly the respect we give to Oregon that if you don't win the whole thing or even at least get to the title game, can you really call it a successful season?
Well, I don't even.
I mean, I know a coach will because they'll say number one, we were number one all year and all of that. And I'm not saying nothing good happened this year, but how do you not just have a bitter taste in your mouth and that's just sort of how you end it?
I don't, because I think you're on a trajectory towards a national title. I know that technically you got farther last year being in the Final Four and you were Final Eight, but that's just the way the seeding laid out. I think this is a building block. I don't know actually who's going to be the quarterback, but unless they, sorry if they have somebody lined up for next year, but I think like you clearly see the progression towards a title contender. Like he's going to be there every year. Don't you feel like with that money and that coaching staff, like they're in great position in the NIL world to be like Alabama and Georgia were before? I think things are looking up for the program. I'm not feeling depressed at all. I mean, yeah, I'm depressed about yesterday in the short term, but I would watch out for Dan Lanning in Oregon. I would not count them out by any means. I do not think they're a flash in the pan.
They're not a flash in the pan, but this has got to be, I mean, really bitter because... Listen, you had a tough road in the college football playoff once the seeding came out or once you saw your draw, it was going to be tough. But
yeah, I mean, you were an underdog.
Yeah, but when is it going to line up for you again like this?
Well, now it's like college basketball where there's not going to be a wire-to-wire number one dominant team anymore. Now you got to just get into the field and hope for the
Except
best.
Except for UConn.
Yeah, well, I know, but before UConn did it, what was the last repeat champion?
855
doesn't happen anymore.
212-4227. Okay, so obviously we're talking a lot about the games that happened. We still have one more game that needs to be played, and that is the Sugar Bowl, which will happen today at 4:00 Eastern time. And the reason it's being played today is a horrific one for a horrific reason because of the tragedy that happened on Bourbon Street on New Year's Eve with the terrorist attack that killed 15 people and injured dozens more. Matt Baker was covering the Sugar Bowl for The Athletic. He is now covering an open investigation along with a football game. He's going to join us next. It's Maggie Perloff. What a horrible way to wake up on New Year's Day. Welcome to the show, Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff, with the news of what had happened in New Orleans, the tragedy on Bourbon Street where a terrorist attack, terrorist ramming his car into a crowd of people, just absolutely devastating. 15 people are dead, dozens more are hurt, and obviously a community is mourning and our hearts are heavy as well. How it intersects with sports, and which is our territory here and usually the sandbox of life that we get to play around in, is that the Sugar Bowl has been postponed until today, Perloff. So Matt Baker is in New Orleans covering the Sugar Bowl for The Athletic. He's a national college sports reporter for The Athletic and is, we said, in New Orleans and was in New Orleans, obviously, on New Year's Eve evening. Matt, thank you so much for the time. We're so relieved that you are safe and sound. How are things feeling down in New Orleans right now?
Well, thanks for having me. It's a little eerie, not going to lie. You know, I was walking around yesterday trying to figure out what press conference is where, you know, doing my job, and you walk by kind of the entrance to Bourbon Street, and there's a white coroner's van parked there 7 hours after the tragedy, the attack, whatever you want to call it. So that's a little jarring. And, you know, just on a personal level, my wife and kid are here. You know, we stopped by New Orleans for me to do some, obviously do some work covering the game on our way home from visiting family for Christmas. And what do we do with the family, right? Do they need to leave? Do they stay? Where are we going to eat? Like, are we comfortable going out for dinner? Like, all this stuff, it's weird and eerie in that way. But it's also, this is going to sound really odd, it's weirder that it's not weirder, if that makes sense. Like, what happened was obviously was awful, right? But there's still a lot of the city that's going around doing almost, not business as usual, because it can't be, but there's still parts of it that feel normal, right? Like, you know, the Ohio State-Oregon game, you know, I was able to watch the second half or so of that last night after I finished up most of the work. And, like, there was a bunch of people in the hotel lobby, you know, drinking, eating dinner, whatever it is, and all watching the game together. That felt normal in a sense, except it wasn't, because there's all these security around. So it's one of the more surreal things I've ever experienced in my career, and God, I hope I don't have to do it again.
Matt, how crowded is New Orleans this week? Like, how many people were down before this happened? How many people are still there? Is it, Maggie and I have been for Super Bowl weeks, and it's quite crowded, but I imagine, like, this is like Mardi Gras level crowds.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty darn crowded, you know, the couple days leading up to it. You know, sidewalks were busy, lots of people around. I haven't really been to New Orleans before, just a little bit here and there, so I don't have a great experience to compare it with, but it was certainly crowded, and lots of people out and about, crowded restaurants, all that stuff, you know, bands going by, and like what you would expect New Orleans to be. It certainly lived up to my expectations there, and it has been more muted, obviously, in the last 24 hours, and like as far as the football aspect of it, the game this afternoon, I don't know what to expect from an attendance aspect, right? Like there were concerns anyway with the college football playoff being as big as it is, and the bowl sites. You know, if I'm a Georgia fan, do I want to spend my money going to a quarterfinal? Do I want to save it for a semifinal? Now you add in this layer where, you know, I certainly know I've heard of people who were going to go to the game and like, you know what? I'm out of here. I don't feel safe. I'm not going to do it. So I don't know what to expect from that perspective here in a few hours at the Superdome.
Matt Baker is joining us. He covers college football for The Athletic and covers college sports for The Athletic. He's in New Orleans covering the Sugar Bowl and obviously the tragedy that happened on New Year's Eve. You know, Matt, as we're reading here on the New York Times and all these websites, that it's still an active investigation. They're still determining whether or not this suspect, I guess, terrorist, whatever you want to call it, acted alone. Have you heard a lot of people question whether it's even appropriate to play the game at all today?
Yeah, and it's a fair question, right? I mean, again, I'll speak just personally, take the professional hat off for a second here. My wife and child are here.
Yeah.
So we have to figure out whether this was a safe place for us, knowing that, you know, I was at the press conference at New Orleans police headquarters yesterday, and they're saying that they don't, you know, the FBI is saying that they don't think this guy acted alone. So what does that mean? I don't have any idea. Are there other bad guys out there? But, you know, some of the authorities at the press conference seem to think that there are. I don't know what that means in terms of, are they here? Are they somewhere else? I have absolutely no idea. But I do know that the police were sweeping the area. I think they kind of cleaned up things, you know, sweeping the area with on foot, with bomb-sniffing dogs and all that stuff. So I do feel at least a little encouraged by that. And obviously, you know, as it comes to the game, I wouldn't think a bad guy would want to attack it, knowing that all the security is going to be here. But I'm not a bad guy, so I don't have any idea. But yeah, it is a fair question whether it should be played or whether it should have been moved or something like that. There's just not a lot of precedence for something like this and how to make it all work. Just, you know, again, forget the security aspect, the actual football side. There's just a lot of moving parts here, and I think it's one of those where there's not a lot of good solutions.
Yeah, Matt, about the football side, how do you think this affects the players?
Well, it's going to affect them in some way, shape, or form, right? I don't know how many of the people are from Louisiana, how many of the players are from Louisiana or New Orleans, but I'm sure it's not zero. And then it's just, you go here thinking this is what the schedule is going to be. And football coaches and their staffs are so fine-tuned to the minute details. And now the whole thing is awry. So, like, what did you do yesterday, right? I'm sure the players and everybody was kind of camped out at their hotels. How are their bodies, right? You know, I'm sure they were trying to get some work in, just move their legs or whatever, but does that affect them? Just as a physical aspect, in addition to the mental and all that other stuff too. So I don't know. This is the terrible radio answer, but I don't know how it's going to affect them. I'm sure it will. But obviously my hope as putting my sports hat on here as the professional, I hope that, well, when the game kicks off, it feels like a normal football game, and we can kind of focus on that for a while.
Matt Baker joined us just for a couple more minutes. He's in New Orleans. He's there to cover the Sugar Bowl now, covering the game in a very, very different light because of the tragic events that happened on New Year's Eve with the terrorist attack. Final one, Matt, from me, which is just what is the schedule today in terms of this game? I know obviously kickoff's around 4 Eastern time, but what do you have any sense of, like, you know, are the teams doing anything different this morning, or just sort of how's the day going to go?
Yeah, I don't have a good answer on how things are going to be different in terms of what the team preparation is. You know, I know I'm expecting a lot of security at the stadium. You know, I've covered games and events where presidents are there, and I don't know that it's going to have like that level of security, but I'm certainly expecting a lot. You know, if any fans are listening, I would probably encourage you to show up early and expect a lot of security from that aspect. And yeah, game's at 3 local time here, and I'm hoping it kicks off fine. And like I said, that it's an entertaining game, which we haven't had a ton of them in the playoffs so far. And, you know, then we can just focus on ball.
Well, Matt, thank you for your reporting. You can read Matt in The Athletic. Basically, The Athletic, obviously, right now it's owned by the New York Times. So it's all the news is right there, constantly updating articles. And we appreciate you taking some time to talk with us. Again, we're relieved that you and your family are safe. And good luck today covering the game. We appreciate your perspective.
Sure. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you. That's Matt Baker in New Orleans.
Wow.
Surreal. I mean, you have to, you know, Matt's saying as a personal thing, he's there with his wife and kid. You got to be second guessing, do I even want to cover this game? I mean, everyone's got a job to do, but he's at a press conference yesterday with the police commissioner, and you have FBI who are saying they're not sure if this lunatic acted alone.
Yeah. It's definitely scary for everyone involved. I hope that, you know, for the city of New Orleans, it's a big deal to have the Sugar Bowl. I hope the game goes off today without a hitch, and it's a great game. Again, I'm glad they didn't move the city, because I'm telling you, I'll bet you if you did a vote in New Orleans, definitely keep the game here. Like, this is what New Orleans does. So I hope there's a return to normalcy soon.
I had seen in one article that 100,000 people in town just for the Sugar Bowl, they thought.
Yeah, yeah. And you could go on any night of the week, and there's a gigantic party in New Orleans. Hopefully that party keeps going, because that's the best part of New Orleans, obviously. We were there for Final Four.
We were.
And you remember my story that there was only, I had to take the flight the next day. There was only one hotel room left, and it happened to be on Bourbon Street. And I was booking. I'm like, how loud can it be? It was like an airplane was taking off right outside my room for 7 hours. And this was just a random Tuesday night. Yeah. Didn't sleep much that night.
We had such a good time in New Orleans, and we're really looking forward to going to the Super Bowl this year, too.
Absolutely.
All right, Andrew Bogish is here. He's got headlines for us. Bogues, thanks.
Guys, a lot happened on the Arizona State sideline yesterday in the Peach Bowl. Star running back Cam Scataboo was puking and at times yelling at his coaches about his frustrations with the offense's lack of production. Head coach Kenny Dillingham loved it.
If him being competitive and passionate on the sideline is a negative, then I'm in the wrong sport. The kid's competitive. The kid's passionate. And if that's a negative, then I don't know what a positive is.
On the field, Scataboo accounted for 3 late touchdowns, 1 passing, 2 running, to force OT and then give Arizona State the lead on Texas. That's when Quinn Ewers took over with back-to-back TD throws. The first on 4th down to force double OT. He and Texas surviving 39-31 when Sam Levitt was picked off near the goal line. So that Peach Bowl had all the drama. The Rose Bowl was Ohio State 34, Oregon zilch in the second quarter. It ended 41-21 Buckeyes. There's a valid argument that the top-seeded Ducks should have had an easier opponent in this round, but head coach Dan Lanning, not part of that convo.
We had an opportunity. We didn't take advantage of our opportunity. I'm not going to make excuses for our opportunity, right? And ultimately, you got to be great teams to be in position at the end of the year, and we didn't do that. This is the road that we had to travel, and they did it better than us tonight.
Ohio State had 4 touchdowns and 2 field goals over its first 7 possessions. All 4 of those TDs came from 40-plus yards out. The Buckeyes and Longhorns now prep for their semifinal in Dallas next Friday night. As you guys were just discussing, Notre Dame, Georgia, 4 Eastern today in the Sugar Bowl. Holding that game overnight has also moved the Gator Bowl. Duke and Ole Miss now kicking off at 8 Eastern tonight in Jacksonville. The NFL just unveiled Pro Bowl rosters. One mini bit of history. Zay Flowers is the first Ravens receiver to be picked for the game in the club's 29-year history. 8 teammates picked as well, including Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry. Those 9, that leads the way. The Lions' next most Pro Bowlers with 7.
I already have a Pro Bowl snub gripe I'm really mad about, and these just came out.
Yeah, I was going to say, I haven't even seen the whole list yet.
So the entire Eagles offensive line made it, except for Jordan Mailata, who's the best left tackle in football by like a long stretch. He's number 1 grade in PFF all year long. And he's not on there. Their left tackle, and everybody else made it.
Did he play every game?
I
thought he was hurt for a little bit, wasn't he?
That I have to check.
And their reward is to play a dodgeball game.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
so right. I forgot
the Pro Bowl isn't a game anymore. It's
At least they're not doing 4 teams like NBA.
Mailata's played 12 games this year.
Yeah.
That's probably why.
I don't know.
Valid or not, that's probably why.
Manny, yeah, what are the other events? You can look it up. Dodgeball, something, tag.
There's like a funky catch competition where they like it's like they throw the ball up and you have to go do something crazy, or it's like maybe a variation of horse, but the wide receivers do it.
Go. Can I just say the starting left tackle in the AFC is somebody very near and dear to the show.
Yeah.
Deion Dawkins.
Not the first time he's made the Pro Bowl.
EJ, your guy.
Love him.
To console EJ after he tore his patellar tendon,
and he really did console you.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
And by the way,
didn't need my mom. I had Deion Dawkins.
I mean, did say he was going to get you out for a game.
I mean, we should said he'd take care of me.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, and by the way, well deserved. I mean, that guy in the last game. Oh my God! Like that guy's so good.
He's amazing. Yeah, watching him play.
He's fantastic.
Yeah.
He's so good.
Which is why he decided to play a practical joke on everybody before he signed his last contract extension, said, like, thanks for the wings, everyone. I'm out. I was like, wait, what? In the middle, on a random Tuesday? And it was just a joke. Guy's got an odd sense of humor, but I like him.
I'm sorry, one more question. Did Sam Darnold get the nod?
Sam Darnold made it, but Jared Goff's the starter.
Okay. Yes. That's exciting.
Patrick Mahomes, not a Pro Bowler for the first time.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, did he put up Pro Bowl numbers?
Absolutely not.
Let's get back now to judging quarterbacks by their looks. Jimmy Garoppolo will start for the Rams on Sunday against the Seahawks. L.A. choosing to protect Matthew Stafford, even though a win gets them the 3 seed in the NFC, which would keep them away from the Lions-Vikings loser in round 1. The Knicks didn't have Jalen Brunson last night because of a sore calf, but they remain majestic.
Towns drives and finishes with authority.
Mike Breen on MSG, Karl-Anthony Towns, 31 points, 21 boards, and Josh Hart with 15 points, 14 rebounds, and 12 assists, becoming the first Knicks since Michael Ray Richardson in 1981 BM. That's before Manny, with back-to-back triple-doubles all in a 119-103 decision over the Jazz. The Knick win streak is now 9 games.
Bang! Bang!
Might they win out?
Yeah. Some people are asking. Some people.
Longest winning streak since 2013.
Oof. Well, we have to make room since the Carson Wentz poster is gone in the corner.
Yeah.
I have a new thing. My Mikal Bridges signed basketball will be arriving in the studio shortly.
Bang! Bang!
And Mike Breen will be here to accept it.
For the ceremony.
Yeah.
Personal friend of Andrew Bogut.
For the ceremony. You haven't been back in studio since the amazing night courtside at the Garden.
Yes, which the Knicks have obviously won.
Mm.
Yeah.
And now Perloff is weirdly this good luck charm, according to EJ.
Yeah, Knicks haven't lost a game since that happened.
Yeah, I don't. What do you mean? I'm not sure what to say about that.
But they were winning before
that,
right?
But I already told the story on air. Though.
I know, but was there more to the story?
No. I came on the next day on the phone.
Yeah.
That was the story. No, there really wasn't more to the story.
I mean, it was an amazing story. If you guys didn't hear it, Perloff got courtside seats because, thank you, Dr. Rock Positano, who's a friend of the show and season ticket holder, someone was sitting in his seats.
Some jerk who, there was some confusion. I had to wait 2 minutes. So the guy comes up to me and says, "Who's your favorite Nick?" Bam, you and Doug's in your face. I answered Mikal Bridges because he's from Philadelphia. So I was like, you know, I'm a Sixers fan, but like I can live with Mikal Bridges. So they delivered a Mikal Bridges signed basketball, which will be in the studio.
Now, I think Perloff made a grave mistake. However, it's in the moment. So like I can forgive you for this, but you should have said current or all time.
No. Oh, that's great.
Walt Clyde Frazier could have signed your basketball, and that would be epically cool.
But which would be the most valuable? I think I should
ask for Brunson.
I should ask for Brunson. Bridges is a good player, too. I mean, there's that. But Brunson, I don't know. Like, I feel like Brunson, now the cat's there, doesn't want to shoot a lot, and his scoring's going to go down. I don't know if that signature is going to be worth a lot.
Are you kidding me? let's keep the vibes good, okay? You went to a game. The Knicks haven't lost since. They're the best team in the NBA in this stretch.
Honestly, I should ask for Cat.
Could ask for Towns.
The Brunson thing is crazy because Villanova and Philly. Like, well, Brunson is an Eagles fan and played at Villanova. Like,
Bridges is really Philly. And I would have done DiVincenzo if he was still there, too, because he's really Philly as well.
Michael Jordan is Delaware.
Tough choice. I panicked.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Delaware is annexed by Philadelphia. Delaware is a Philadelphia suburb.
The Michael Jordan of Delaware.
I know.
You have a great point. I should ask for Patrick Ewing or somebody.
Well, I don't know if Ewing's in the building. You know Frazier's in the building because he does the color analyst.
Well, they didn't actually go to Mikal Bridges and say, sign a ball.
Oh, they just had it in the back?
Yeah.
They have a stamp. I thought Mikal Bridges
They have
a room of signed stuff already, I would think.
I know, but for authentication purposes, I would have thought you would have got to see him sign the ball.
Oh, God, no.
It's probably some staffer in the back who just spells it M-I-K-C-K.
Authentic. What are you talking about? Like, I was lucky that they gave me a I would have just taken a basketball. I would have taken a mini basketball and been through.
Can you ask for a celebrity fan?
You check that signature. You're going to be like, is there an X in Bridges?
Yeah.
You ask for Matthew Modine.
No. Actually, I think they probably kind of do this thing all the time. Matthew Modine. By the way, we're getting to the point where my daughter knew all the celebrities and I did not. That was like, oh, right. I am old and she's on TikTok. I do not know who these people are.
Bogus, thank you. Got to take a quick break. Coming up, it's a controversy. It won't die. We're going to get to it next. Welcome back. Sorry, I got caught up looking at the Pro Bowl rosters that were just released. For quarterback in the AFC, Josh Allen, Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson. And in the NFC,
Goff, Daniels, and Darnold. Wow, Jaden Daniels. Look at that.
So we got to... How about that? We've got to talk about what's going on with Saquon Barkley. We did this earlier, or I mentioned it earlier in our M&P 500 segment, Perloff, whose stock is up and whose stock is down. I said stock down on rushing records getting broken because in college, you had Ashton Janti from Boise State was only 27 yards away from breaking Barry Sanders' all-time record. And now for Saquon Barkley, 101 yards from breaking Eric Dickerson's all-time record. And I hate the fact that they're not playing him and keeping him from trying to get this individual achievement. It's so rare in football that you ever get anything individual. Mm-hmm. I know we're doing Pro Bowls right now, so I guess that. But it's so rare you get anything. And Saquon Barkley has been one of the most unselfish players in the NFL, period, full stop. I mean, he could have held out with the Giants, never did, reported to camp, never made it about him. He's never done anything to make it about him, ever. And the fact that he wanted to go for this for 100 yards, which he probably could get in the first half against the lowly New York Giants, let him do it.
I mean, you said it, you summed it up beautifully there. It's about the individual. And the great thing, I think the reason football is the number one sport in America is because it's the most team-focused sport. Like, everything you do is for the guys around you. And going for this individual record, which is totally meaningless, by the way, because he has an extra game. So let's be honest about what that is. And also, too, I understand what you're saying. I don't think, I guess Eric Dickerson's making a big deal of this, but most single-season NFL records just go by the wayside. Like, people don't even know what they are. It's not like baseball where records are sacred and numbers mean something. Like, I don't know who has the most, like, passing yards in a season. I assume it's Brady or Peyton. Like, those numbers are not sacred in the NFL. This one's a little bigger, but it's not that big. I mean, come on.
I think it is because I think we all knew that Eric Dickerson had it up until now. And be honest, if you're going to say, well, he had 17 games and Dickerson only had 16. Well, O.J. Simpson had 14. And we still consider Eric Dickerson with more games to be the single season rushing record. If we really were holding true to games, it would still be. I know O.J. is distasteful to talk about for a lot of reasons, yeah. Obviously. But if we're really talking about who should have the record, shouldn't it be O.J.? Because he did it in, he had over 2,014 games.
Well, I think in NFL history, that is a more significant season than Eric Dickerson's 2,105.
Okay.
I mean, everyone knows about that 2,000-yard season at the time. For a long time, that was one of the biggest deals. That was a little different because he was the first guy to get he got the 2,000, yeah. Right? 2003?
With the Bills, yeah.
Yeah, but again, I feel dumb. Like, what's this? Is a single season receiving record is Calvin Johnson or is it Jerry Rice? I don't even know.
I just think that it's about whether or not you want to let Saquon Barkley have this moment.
Right. Yeah, but it's not a let. It's about what's best for the team winning a Super Bowl because that is the only goal. This isn't, there's no NBA in-season tournament. This is like the real deal.
Okay, but I just love how it's like everyone can tell the future. Like if he's going to play in this game and he's going to rush for 105 yards and break the record, it also means that he's going to shatter his femur. Like nobody, you don't know that. He could just have a regular, normal game like he's had and be mm-hmm. completely fine.
I think they've been giving way too many touches. I think they should have started winding him down around week 12. I do not know what they're doing.
Okay, and if somehow the Eagles host the Green Bay Packers and you guys lose and Saquon has a bad game, you might say, well, he had too much rest. He was rusty. I mean,
no, that's a running back. There's no rest.
Cam Scataboo yesterday
but you need to be
saying
in,
that.
You need to be in a rhythm to have a passing game. Run, you just get the ball and go to the hole. Like there's no rustiness. He'd be fine. I think the wear and tear on a running back is a real deal. I mean, we've seen it time and time again. Last year, the Niners started winding down McCaffrey at the end of the year, and he was really good in the playoffs. So, I don't know. I really am worried about his touches. Like, and also next year, like, what? He's going to be a puddle.
Well, I mean, one year at a time.
No, I mean, it's running back. I don't look at it that way. I think, like, you don't run your star running back into the ground because look what happened to McCaffrey. They ran him into the ground last year, and he's a total no-show this year.
855-212-4227. I just think it's, you know, you have to take everything into context here. And I think who Saquon Barkley has been throughout his career, again, unselfish.
What does that have to do with the Philadelphia Eagles in 2024? That is such a non-factor. He was unselfish with the Giants? Who cares?
He's never, ever, ever made it about himself. And he's not doing that now, by the way, to his credit. Yeah. He's being totally cool about this, as of course he is, because he's Saquon. He's a classy guy. But for the team not to say, hey, we're going to be able to let you have this so that when your grandkids are or whatever, you can tell them you are the single season rushing record. Because Eric Dickerson has held since 1984 or whatever.
Yeah, the chance to win a Super Bowl is so much more important than any individual record ever could be. And unfortunately, if he did break this and they lost, people would be upset. People would hold it against him.
Thank you, DJ Stewart. Thank you to Manny Rodriguez, Andrew Bogish, Andrew Kaplan, Weedos Coffee Drinkers. It's 2025. We're better than ever. We'll see you tomorrow.
Wow, Jaden Daniels. Look at that.